Russia and China are both seeking to drive a wedge in our transatlantic solidarity.
But not everyone at NATO agreed completely. This is Wednesday, the 16th of June, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, Myanmar's ousted leader faces some serious charges in court. VOA has new details about the expected future U.S. role in Afghanistan. A study says coronavirus was present in the United States well before it was found. Praise for Australia for drastically reducing the amount of plastic waste. Fear in Hong Kong over a nearby Chinese reactor. It is all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. President Joe Biden met with European Union allies on Tuesday after wrapping up a summit with NATO leaders ahead of his highly anticipated meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin. White House correspondent Patsy Witty-Kaswara has this report from Brussels.
Following the G7 in Britain, another meeting to strengthen transatlantic relations, this time at the summit of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization in Brussels. The 30 member countries reaffirmed the military alliance that binds Europe and North America. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg.
Especially at a time when authoritarian regimes like Russia and China challenge the rules-based international order.
U.S. President Joe Biden is using the Monday NATO summit, as well as the EU summit on Tuesday, to shore up support in dealing with Beijing and Moscow, ahead of his Wednesday meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin.
Russia and China are both seeking to drive a wedge in our transatlantic solidarity. We're seeing an increase in malicious cyber activity. But our alliance is a strong foundation.
While allies agree they must stand firm against Moscow's activities, including cyber attacks, election meddling, and expansionist ambitions, there is less consensus in how to deal with China. French President Emmanuel Macron said relations with China go beyond the scope of NATO, a military alliance.
Il est économique, il est stratégique, il est de valeur, il est technologique.
It is economic, it is strategic, it is of value, it is technological, and it is not to divert in any way NATO, which already has many challenges.
Still, European leaders were united in welcoming U.S. President Joe Biden's commitment to multilateralism after 4 years of the America First doctrine under former President Donald Trump. At one point, Trump called NATO obsolete and complained that the U.S. was paying too much for the alliance. German Chancellor Angela Merkel.
We were able to open a new chapter with the newly elected American President Joe Biden, who made it very clear right from the start that the United States of America has a clear commitment to NATO.
The alliance adopted NATO 2030, a consultation mechanism to face growing global competition and more unpredictable threats, including the pandemic and climate change. Elise Biongolong is a senior fellow at Chatham House.
There are still contentious issues on the table, and this summit was the starting point of a reflection process that will lead to allies agreeing on renewing their strategic concept, which is basically their roadmap in terms of what they want to do together.
Leaders discussed U.S. and NATO troops withdrawal from Afghanistan scheduled by September 11th this year. Biden also met with Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. U.S. relations with Turkey are strained, particularly after Ankara's purchase of Russian S-400 missile defense system, support for Azerbaijan in the 2020 Nagorno-Karabakh war with Armenia, and military offensive in Syria. Biden meets EU leaders Tuesday before heading to Geneva to meet Putin.
He is a, as they say, when he used to play ball, a worthy adversary.
From Brussels, Patsy Witty-Kaswara, VOA News.
In a summit statement, NATO leader Jens Stoltenberg said that China's goals and assertive behavior present systemic challenges to the rules-based international order and to areas relevant to alliance security.
We are concerned by China's coercive policies, which stand in contrast to the fundamental values enshrined in the Washington Treaty. China is rapidly expanding its nuclear arsenal with more warheads and a larger number of sophisticated delivery systems. It is opaque in implementing its military modernization. It is cooperating militarily with Russia, including through exercises in the Euro-Atlantic area. We also remain concerned about China's use of disinformation. NATO leaders called on China to uphold its international commitments and to act responsibly in the international system, including in space, cyber, and maritime domains, in keeping with its role as a major power.
While the 30 heads of state and government avoided calling China a rival, they did call on Beijing to uphold its international commitments and to act responsibly in the international system. Beijing says NATO's description that China poses systemic challenges to the international community is an exaggeration. These are some of the stories at voanews.com. Taiwan officials say China flew a record 28 fighter jets toward the self-ruled island Tuesday, the largest such display of force since Beijing began sending planes on a near-daily basis last year. Thailand's prime minister apologizes and takes the blame for coronavirus vaccination delays. Gunmen kill 5 polio vaccinators in Afghanistan. Indian government in standoff with Twitter over online speech. Australia's biggest exporting state urges Canberra to stop antagonizing China, the country's top trade partner. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Myanmar's ousted leader Aung San Suu Kyi went on trial Monday on charges that many observers say they are an attempt by the junta that deposed her to eliminate her as a political force, erase the country's democratic gains, and cement the military's power. The prosecution of the politician, which continued Tuesday, has been seen as another major setback for democracy in Myanmar after the leader was arrested during a coup in February after her National League for Democracy party had a landslide election victory. Human Rights Watch said that the allegations being heard in a special court in the capital of Naypyidaw are bogus and politically motivated, with the intention of nullifying the victory and preventing Suu Kyi from running for office again. As VOA Burmese Service Chief Tan Lun Tan tells International Edition host Steve Miller, it was the first trial date of many more to come.
And then the most interesting thing is about the today's charges is that telecommunication act. So using an illegally imported walkie-talkies. What kind of walkie-talkies they are talking about, we don't know. But what I learned is that there's been a few walkie-talkie set confiscated at her residence, which has said have been used by the her security, details. And it's a very, very quite strange that her security details has been provided. It was provided by the state. And why that was that kind of charge, we don't know. We're not very clear about that.
And ultimately, if she's convicted, how much time in prison would she be looking at?
You know that the schedules are a bit funny. I have to say that even lawyer doesn't know that what kind of schedules and what kind of charges will be taken up at the time. But among those 7 charges we know of, is that 2 of the charges are the most serious, which is corruption charges, and then another one is violation of state secret act. So each charges carry a maximum of 15 years in prison sentence. So for me, and I don't know about the violation of state secret. What was a little bit of disclosed was that it is related to the financial or some sort of information through that one of our Australian economic advisor, Sean Turner. So it was related to him. This is vaguely we knew about it. But another one we knew is definitely is just last week press conference by the military regime. It disclosed that government anti-corruption commission make a charge against Aung San Suu Kyi that she's been receiving bribe and then also using her position to acquire some sort of lands and buildings for her foundation, which is in the name of her mother. And also there was a kind of a video confession by the Rangoon Division Chief Minister, and which is a very high-ranking official, in a video confession that he bribed Aung San Suu Kyi for nearly $6 million plus about 7 gold bars or something like that. So there's no statement from Aung San Suu Kyi and other people from that the defendant side, but these are the charges. They are quite serious.
VOA Burmese Service Chief Tanlun Tan talking with VOA host Steve Miller. Happening now in Asia, a militia group in Myanmar's conflict-torn Kaya State announced a halt to attacks on military targets Tuesday after appeals from local communities to cease fighting that had damaged homes and displaced more than 100,000 people. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We thank you for spending part of your day with us here on VOA Asia. New details have emerged about the expected U.S. role in Afghanistan after America's military exit after nearly 20 years of war. Our VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb is the only reporter traveling with the commander of U.S. Central Command, which oversees military operations across Afghanistan and the Middle East.
The United States is not planning to support Afghan forces with airstrikes against the Taliban once the U.S. troop withdrawal is complete. That's what General Frank McKenzie, the head of U.S. Central Command, told VOA in an exclusive interview while traveling to Europe and the Middle East.
The United States forces are going to be striking the Taliban if they put Afghan forces in danger. That is continuing to go on right now, correct?
So long as we have forces in country, those forces, as you know, are going to draw down to zero at some point in the future. After that, any strikes that we do in Afghanistan are going to be against Al-Qaeda and ISIS.
McKenzie said future counter-terror strikes in Afghanistan will be limited to instances where enemy plans have been discovered that aim to strike America and its allies at home, as when thousands were killed on September 11, 2001.
That would be the reason for any strikes that we do in Afghanistan after we leave. It would have to be that we've uncovered someone who wants to attack the homeland of the United States, one of our allies and partners.
Experts and former commanders have raised concerns about the lack of details Washington has revealed so far about securing Afghanistan after the U.S. withdrawal. With just a short time until U.S. forces complete their withdrawal, retired General Joseph Votel, the former head of Central Command, told VOA that transparency with Afghan allies is key.
And I think we owe it to them to be as clear as we can possibly be so that we are planning against what it is our policy is, and they have a clear understanding of what it is that we are going to do, but also what we are not going to do.
The U.S. and NATO allies will continue to fund Afghan soldiers' salaries, help their Air Force with aircraft maintenance, and train Afghan troops. The latter two will be done outside of Afghanistan. But to military experts who fear the Afghan military will fall once U.S. troops leave, those efforts aren't enough.
Just because we leave and we say it's over, it's not over. You know, we talk about forever wars. Well, the Taliban is interested in Al-Qaeda and in a forever jihad, and they're going to keep fighting.
The Pentagon has publicly said a Taliban victory is not a foregone conclusion. Privately, defense officials admit they are much more worried. Carla Babb, VOA News, Naval Air Station Sigonella, Italy.
This is VOA Asia.
After you listen to VOA Asia, see it. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free and see us often on VOA Asia YouTube.
Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte will never cooperate with an international criminal court probe into the country's deadly drug war, his spokesman said on Tuesday, branding the process legally erroneous. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. The novel coronavirus was present in the United States in December of 2019, weeks before health officials first identified infections, according to a new government study conducted by a team that included researchers from the U.S. National Institute of Health. The study analyzed 24,000 blood samples. The findings suggest that some Americans were infected as early as the middle of December of 2019, weeks before the world recognized the spread of the new deadly virus that erupted in the Chinese city of Wuhan. While the analysis is inconclusive and some experts remain unconvinced, more federal health officials are accepting a scenario during which small numbers of people in the U.S. were infected with the virus before the world was aware of its spread. The study, published Tuesday by the Clinical Infectious Diseases Journal, is the latest and largest to suggest the virus first appeared in the U.S. earlier than previously known. It found that at least seven people in the U.S., states of Massachusetts, Mississippi, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin were infected earlier than any COVID-19 case was ever reported in those states. Conservationists have praised efforts by Australian authorities to drastically reduce the amount of plastic waste and eliminate some disposable coffee cups. From Sydney, Phil Mercer has more.
Researchers want to reduce the mountain of personal protective equipment, or PPE, that's discarded around the world daily. According to experts in New Zealand, estimates indicate that in China alone, hundreds of thousands of metric tons of PPE are going to the landfill each day. Mark Steger is an associate professor of materials engineering at the University of Canterbury.
The amount of waste that's being produced by the pandemic is absolutely huge. It's been estimated that there's something like 3 million face masks are being used per minute around the world. Other studies have shown there's something like 3.5 billion face masks and face shields are being discarded globally every day.
Masks and gowns contain plastics that can't easily be recycled. Researchers from Canterbury, Otago and Auckland universities are testing a process that would destroy the COVID-19 virus and allow the PPE to be used again. The aim is to safely disinfect protective equipment so it can be used by frontline workers. If successful, Steger says the system could increase the supply of N95 masks, which filter out airborne particles, by 400%.
A particular challenge in decontaminating face masks, for example, is making sure that whatever technique you use for killing off the virus doesn't affect the materials contained within the mask. For example, N95 masks have a special electrostatic layer inside them, which is used for capturing very small particles. And if that layer is damaged by the treatment that you're using or the decontamination treatment that you're using, this would render the mask ineffective and lose its functionality.
The US Food and Drug Administration has said PPE creates a barrier between an individual's skin, mouth, nose or eyes and viral and bacterial infections. It's mostly designed to be used only once. The New Zealand University study began in 2020. Its final stage is underway and is due to finish later this year. The research team is also building a mobile disinfection unit that could be transported in shipping containers to other countries. New Zealand has an enviable record of containing COVID-19, in large part because it closed its borders to most foreign nationals in March 2020. It's recorded about 2,700 confirmed or probable infections. 26 people have died. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Making headlines in Asia, a health official says Pakistan has lifted a rule barring the use of AstraZeneca's COVID-19 vaccine for people below 40 years old, a bid to help inoculate people who need to travel for education or jobs abroad, particularly to Saudi Arabia. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We'll be right back. Now on VOA Asia, people in Hong Kong reacted on Tuesday to reports of a possible leak in a nearby Chinese nuclear power plant. Hong Kong resident Lee Tok said he believed that the possible leak could be a bigger problem than the coronavirus pandemic, but Justin Santini, a teacher, said he wasn't concerned.
I think I'm not concerned because various government officials have said that it isn't a problem as of yet. Not only local officials, but also overseas officials. And I think something this big would probably be involved with other countries, other officials as well. So I think until more alarm bells are raised, it's probably premature to be concerned about, concern.
China's government said Tuesday no abnormal radiation was detected outside the plant in Taishan, 135 kilometers west of Hong Kong. The operators at the plant said they were dealing with a performance issue, but provided little more information. Nuclear experts said that based on what the operators said, gas might be leaking from fuel rods inside the reactor. In Hong Kong, radiation levels Tuesday were normal, according to the Hong Kong Observatory. We continue on VOA Asia. Digital images of fake people who look real are being sold online by the thousands. Dina Mitchell explores the issue.
These faces, created by artificial intelligence, are the product of Generated Dot Photos, a company that sells the faces that are used by gaming companies to make more realistic characters and other businesses requiring stock images. Ivan Braun is the founder of Generated Photos.
That machine learning model, it learns how people look like, where noses are located, how many eyes people have, what kind of hairstyle is possible. Based on that knowledge, they start painting the portraits.
Braun's company paired thousands of photos of real-life models with publicly available software from the computer graphics company NVIDIA to create a database of more than 2.5 million AI-generated faces. Braun says his initial goal was just to cut down labor costs of hiring photographers, models, makeup artists, a simple enough aspiration. But with the lack of regulation, the fake faces are proving an easy resource for deception. There are telltales in some images that show they are computer-generated faces. Weird spots, earrings that don't match, or blurriness around the hairline. But UC Berkeley professor Hani Farid, an expert at detecting fake images, says the best way to avoid fraud attempts is to be aware of your online clicks.
There is a virus out there. There is a disease, which is misinformation. But you are part of the problem. You are spreading it. When you like and when you share and when you retweet without giving it a second thought, you are a carrier to this epidemic.
Braun is aware his images could be used to trick people. So his company is sharing its data with some social media companies to help them detect when AI-generated images are used. Their latest feature is called Anonymizer. You upload your own image, and it shoots back several slight, variations of your face, making deciphering what's real even more blurred. Dina Mitchell for VOA News.
Around 100 mostly young activists marched across the Golden Gate Bridge into San Francisco Monday. It is the last leg of a 266-mile march to demand bolder action from politicians on climate change. Flora Bradley Watson reports.
The protesters carried banners calling for a Green New Deal. They're now on the last leg of a 266-mile march, which began in the fire-ravaged town of Paradise and will end outside House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's home. They say help for the state's wildfires could come in the form of a civilian climate corps, similar to the Civilian Conservation Corps, created to help lift the US out of the Great Depression under President Roosevelt. One of the protest's lead organizers is Ema Gouveia.
They are not being brave and they're not fighting hard enough to keep the climate in this infrastructure bill, to fight for the boldest, most well-funded civilian climate corps possible. And we know we understand the science. We know what is necessary. We are asking for their legislation to be at scale with the climate crisis. And frankly, everything that they're putting forward is too watered down. It's just not enough.
That was Reuters correspondent Flora Bradley Watson. Thank you for joining us. Thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, Amy Heibels, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman. Please stay safe and enjoy the day ahead.